Welcome to Fear of the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is John.
This is Julia.
Still Chad.
And this is still Chris.
All right, this started out as a regular episode and has now descended into a bonus episode. So
clearly.
Boner episode.
Yeah, all right. So let's get through the two relevant announcements, and then it's just going to descend into chaos from there. So the two announcements here.
Discord.
First off, by the time
that got that.
This drops... Yeah, jokes like that are a rarity.
Oh,
by the time that this drops...
Did you know they made that pun? Never mind.
Go. No, okay.
Yeah. Go on.
I'm
not stopping you.
Okay, all right, fine. It was my little pun.
It was your pun.
By the time this episode drops, there will also be an episode that I guess it onto the Established Facts, which is one of the other shows that is in our Fear the Boot non-network, along with...
Why are you so afraid to call it a network? Why do you have this fear?
Because the fact that I have not actually done what it would take to put together a network, like, you know, creating a portal site or anything like that. I don't feel like
FearTheBoot.com/forum. Boom, portal site.
Okay, fair enough. But I don't know. Maybe I feel like I should aggregate the feeds or some silliness like that.
Why don't you delegate that out? I mean, there's a whole bunch of technical
network.
People.
That's like a union.
Don't delegate it to us.
Right.
Fear the Boot host, because we're like really lazy.
Okay.
But there are.
I'm not included in that.
You're a girl. I mean,
I need
but you
somebody
can delegate it to one so anybody.
I need somebody who's going to take on a misguided effort to promote things on the internet. Would Mike Stackpole be willing to step up and take this over?
Hey, now Stackpole wrote some good stuff.
I didn't bank on his novels.
That was laced in your comment. You know it was.
No, actually, I love Stackpole's novels. I have many of them. In fact, I have...
Do you have many leather-bound copies?
I do. I have many leather-bound books.
If there was a real nice, like, bound hardback 4-volume thing of the first handful of X-Wing novels, I would actually buy that. Yeah. I don't buy very many collector's
I'm making
books.
Fun of the man, but, I mean, hell, I commissioned 2 paintings of Rana, one of his characters, so...
I thought Rana was one of your characters.
No.
Really?
That's Sackville character, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, anyway. So, the point being here, anyway. I was on an episode of The Established Facts, talked about a bunch of cool stuff, including they asked me where we keep coming up with show topics from, so you can hear me talk about that. And we talked about a bunch of things that had nothing to do with Fear the Boot, general role-playing topics and such. So it is a great episode. I had a lot of fun doing it. Check it out. I will put a link to that episode in the show notes. I'm pretty sure it'll drop by the time that this episode dropped. And then, Chad, there was something that we as kind of as a show wanted to plug here, but I feel you are best equipped to do it because I've never played in it.
Yeah. So last Fear the Con, and actually the Fear the Con before that, there's a guy named Tim Rodriguez. He's Ogre Teeth on our forums. And by the way, our forums, really awesome. If you haven't been there, great community. None of that internet bullshit that you usually get. But anyway, Tim, he made a game. He's actually made 2 games. One of them is Ghost Pirates, and he kickstarted that, and it was successful. I've not played it. I understand that it's really fun and popular. And that's more of a board game, but he also made a role-playing game called Hyperreality. It's a reality TV game show comedy role-playing game. The first one he ran at Fear the Con was like called Scareboat or something like that. And it's really fun. I can't do it justice. We played, what was its name?
But the video he's got on his Kickstarter, yeah. Isn't that actually clips from some of the... games? Because doesn't he have during the games he like records the players
yes.
doing confessionals
yeah
like, just like you would get on a reality TV show
yeah
oh,
and then,
wow
and
that
he,
sounds really neat
he records us That's doing cool. like promos for the not the game but the game show we are playing
was that
the
one shot that Beth ran for you guys when I was GMing and I was on vacation because you did confessionals for that too
that was Inspectors
okay. that was Inspectors yeah and this one like the one they did most recently I think was on the moon
it was on the moon because it's a reality TV show where you get these wild characters and that's who you play and then you have to do these games but then you also do stuff like behind the scenes
so like
and,
the real world
the, yeah it's like the real world okay. but it's in the future where everybody's doing reality shows so they're doing extreme reality shows called hyper reality TV so all the stuff you're doing is really dangerous and incredibly stupid and stuff and so they keep trying to take it to the next level so we took it to the next level we took it to space. And we did it on the moon where there's a junkyard because we just put all of our junk on the moon in the future. And so we went to the moon, did the junkyard, and it was like chainsaw strippers were trying to kill us. There was like hovercraft on the moon. And I can't even make any of these jokes. You had to be there. Let me put to you this way. We were at Fear the Con. We played this game. This group of us played this game. And it was the funniest role-playing game I've ever played in my life. Afterwards, we're standing around. You know, everybody's talking about con experiences and stuff like that. And we're talking. And then somebody will come up to you, and they were in this game. And then they would say something like, "What?" or "Bam!" or something like that. It was a joke in the game. And then you would just fall over laughing. Your gut would hurt. You were laughing so hard, and everyone's looking at you like you're an idiot because they don't get the joke. But that's what this game was. It is a hilarious game, and Tim's got a Kickstarter for it, and you should check it out.
Yeah, we'll link that in the show notes. I've heard nothing but good things about this game, not just from Chad, but from all the people who play. I personally not had a chance to play it, but we got much love for the game. We also got much love for Tim himself. Mm. So check the show notes, get out there, get in on this. And also he's got some backer rewards where you can get copies of Ghost Pirates, his board game and whatnot.
Which so, I also hear, I haven't played that one. I hear that one's really good.
So good stuff out there. All right. So John, do you want to start off with the envelope or the Grey Goose? Where do we need to?
Okay.
Where do we need to start,
We'll start with the Grey Goose.
Yeah, let's start with the Grey Goose.
Okay. So
I was at Sam's one day.
Yeah, you start. The story actually starts with Julie, so you start.
I was at Sam's one day. I left work early, and I was. We were coming down to like a Friday podcast night where we normally drink copious amounts of alcohol and record.
And this is a this is an important detail. This was not that long ago.
It wasn't.
This was perhaps 2 or 3 months ago.
My car was almost brand new, so it was like beginning of December.
Yeah.
And so I happened to be at Sam's, and I call John, and I'm like, oh my gosh, they've got a magnum of Grey Goose here for like, what did I say, $40 or something. It was ridiculous.
Pretty cheap.
And he,
that sounds like Sam's Club.
Yeah.
It was like the cost of a fifth somewhere else, slightly more.
Yeah. And I'm like, should I get it? Will it get drank? And he's like, hell yeah, get that. So I got it. And then now you can finish.
And then we get here tonight and I'm like, where's the booze? And Dan's like, it's all gone. And I'm like, where did it go? We brought a magnum of Grey Goose over. It was supposed to last.
John's thinking like you dropped it or something.
Yeah. And Dan goes, it did last for me. And it's like, you douche nozzle.
Yeah, listen.
Now I have to bring over individual units so you don't drink it.
All right. See, right now, our house is, I mean, not quite on bachelor pad level. Pretty slim pickings in that fridge.
I have a bachelor pad and it's brimming with alcohol.
I have a
You've
picture.
All seen the inside of my fridge. It's a joke.
I have a picture of it.
There's frozen pizzas and beer.
My friend like came over to his house one day and took a picture of his refrigerator because it was such like an anomaly.
It's
she was
a
like,
oh my monument to my
there.
Reckless, short-sighted lifestyle.
Yeah.
Dan, don't feel bad. One of the guys in my group, he's also a bachelor, and his refrigerator just basically is a cold storage unit because there is with nothing in it. There is absolutely zero food in there except for maybe a pitcher of water and like a 12-pack pop.
Yeah, right now ours is not doing a whole lot better. I mean, despite how much smack we talk on this show, with the exception of John, we don't actually all drink all that much. But
what the hell does that mean?
That you drink a lot.
That means exactly what it says.
It means I love life.
I go in cycles. Like right now, I'm at a pretty low drinking cycle. Then I'll get into like maybe a beer cycle. Where I'll consume large quantities of beer. And
me and John find any excuse to go talk to nerds and hand out Fear the Con flyers, which include drinking at random nerd bars.
Okay, and I'm okay with that. But I'm just saying, look.
PR, yo.
All right. So the point being that usually in
John's
life,
a PR engine, and there's only one fuel, and that's alcohol. That's
usually right.
No, Julie's a PR engine. John's a PR decal afterthought.
Usually in my fridge, there's a certain amount of alcohol. I mean, there's a couple beers or whatnot. And it has been slim picked down to nothing. I think there's one bottle of Guinness in there, and that is it. You have to understand.
Guinness, not draft. It's just awful.
You left a huge thing of Grey Goose at my house. And it wasn't like I had no night where I went on like a bender or anything. But it's like I'm having a little trouble sleeping. You know, a double of vodka goes right down. Helps baby go right to sleep.
None of us drink too much on this show except you, John. I just take a double of vodka to go to bed.
Actually, what I imagine, Dan, is one of those
It's very dignified. I'm smoking a pipe and reading Chaucer while I do it.
I imagine
Dan
sitting around a table, and it's like all of his dogs are playing poker, and then he's sitting there, too. They're all drinking.
No, those are my mushroom nights.
Yeah.
What is...
Whoa.
Everything's broken.
Chris, turn off your PC.
You're breaking the internet. We're going to hang up on you in a minute. Why are you fixing this now?
It got bumped. Yeah. I don't know why it why?
This is staying in the show. This is staying in the show as an example of what we have to deal with.
It depends on what comes across on his recording. It's, yeah.
I'll imitate it.
You know when you're playing StarCraft with the, unit tile sounds technology. On?
There we go.
And it's the end of the game and you're like jamming hotkeys and the probe noise and the reaver noise and the dragoon noise are all happening at the same time. That's what that just sounded like.
It's the input on this thing. I have no idea why it gets so, it's so fickle. And before Dan goes and says, well, because it's this and because you suck and because you're gay, I just want to point out,
a Mac user and be done with it, but okay.
That actually went a little farther than I would have gone.
Actually, just work, man.
Go ahead and call me a Mac user. This is on a Windows PC, by the way.
Yeah, and a Mac user using it, it's just like
there's two buttons on the mouse and he's lost.
Anyway, what I was going to say is that this is the equipment that Dan sent me. That's where the problems are.
Look, I'm also using equipment that Dan put together.
I didn't bump my Windows laptop. I didn't bump the Windows laptop. It was one of your cables.
Oh, now it's your cable.
Now it's fine. Yeah. Now, see, there's another group of people that have been using Dan's equipment since 2006. And I've never had an issue where Chad bumped the table and it sounded like we were in the middle of like a 30-minute lightning strike.
I'm gaming while I'm recording.
Okay.
That's why.
All right. Yeah, you're trying to time travel DeLorean. So,
and just to catch you guys up on current events, I haven't had a Mac since last July when it was stolen.
Oh, yeah, that.
So the moral of the story is that if you leave things at Dan's house, they don't get consumed quickly, but they get consumed persistently.
The moral of the story is that projection is a bitch. All right. Story number two. What to do when you have a player whine at you about not giving enough advance notice about a game. This would require some context. Right now, I am running a map tool Pathfinder campaign for some friends who are local and some friends who are not local. And it requires a bit of remote communication just to get set up. I've whined before at length about how nobody shows up to online games. You can never get a hold of people. So I like to be pretty extensive in making people know when they're going to be and forcing them to tell me whether they're going to be there or not. And then not taking them seriously if more than very, very occasionally they say they will show and then don't show. In the course of making my rounds for a session a couple weeks ago, I had Steam IM'd one of my particular players and then texted her a couple days later. Well, she apparently hadn't gotten the Steam IM. When I sent her the text only a short while before the game was to be held, I got reamed on my phone for not giving enough advance notice. So I looked up what a telegram would cost to send. That was too much.
What does a telegram cost these
days? It's like 55 cents a word, including the address.
Holy crap.
Off of a base price of like $9.99 or $19.99.
Holy crap.
And there's all these options that are like, send her flowers, send her chocolate, making a singing telegram. And I'm like, no.
Oh, you should have done singing.
I'm not trying to get laid here. I am, however, trying to embarrass and frustrate, and I require no such tokens of affection for
that. So, Chris, how do you communicate effectively and affordably nowadays?
Pony Express.
It's either an adaptment of the Pony Express, or we have a relay system.
Stop.
Where we basically
no,
we basically shout. We shout from mountainside to mountainside.
You have a beacon on top of your house. And whenever you need assistance, you torch it. And then there's this relay system that goes all the way across the mountaintops to the big city in Dubuque.
Well, maybe that explains his coffee cans.
That's right.
And the unfortunate thing is every message I ever send always ends in Gondor calls for aid.
That's right.
My house is getting broken into.
Oh, Dan. That's not funny, but it is.
This is why Chris can't have nice things. They keep getting stolen.
Anyway, so after deciding that a telegram is too expensive and realizing that I send fancy letters and self-addressed stamped envelopes all the time in the course of being a lawyer, I decided to do that to this particular player. And right now, I am eagerly awaiting her reply. By the time this show drops, the game will have already run, but it is tomorrow, and I haven't heard anything.
So what did you send? You sent, like, a registered mail and...
No. I sent a big package envelope mm-hmm. with an envelope back to me addressed, and I sort of wrote it like a wedding invitation. I picked some goofy-ass formal font in Microsoft Word, yeah. and I was like, Mr. Grana requests the honor of your presence on this... Anno Domini, March 20th, 2013, the year of our Lord, for a regular campaign sitting of the Pathfinder role-playing game. And I used all these fonts, and I was kind of a dick about it. I thought about doing a little return card. It's like, regrets only. Would you like the vegetable plate or the meat plate? And will you be bringing a guest? But I didn't go that far because I'm lazy.
So you guys want to hear a total train wreck of a story?
Yes.
Chris, what's the most awkward way you've ever invited someone to a game?
Oh, shit.
There's so many.
There's awkward ways to invite people to games?
Definitely.
Oh, my gosh. I guess I've never experienced that.
You know what? I can give you my most awkward response to an invite. I actually made somebody uncomfortable when I invited them to a game.
Go on.
And it's not at all for the reasons that you guys would think or that you're hoping for. So I'm going to disappoint you right now.
To be honest with you, I have nothing. I can't even plumb those depths of how uncomfortable you can make somebody. Yeah. It's a concept that is far beyond me. Oh. So go.
Go ahead, Chris.
Oh, okay. Anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. Where this is headed is white noise in the prescience of my mind. So go ahead.
Well, I'm surprised that you've stuck with it this long. So at work... one of our main news anchors, she had discovered that I was a Dungeons & Dragons player. And she, of course, you know, not being anything even close to a Dungeons & Dragons player, she proceeded to give me all kinds of crap. I mean, just was kind of relentless about, you know, going into all the very stereotypical nerd things and geek things, you know, and all of that. You know, she didn't get into the whole steam tunnel thing because I think she was a little bit too young to grasp that, wasn't aware of all that. So she was like, she's coming at me.
Are you giving me,
you know,
Julia, are you giving me the, I don't know what the steam tunnel thing is because I'm too young?
Oh my gosh.
We'll tell you that story after class.
Sit on Papa Chad's knee and hear about the steam tunnels.
I gave you a ride here. I'll tell you on the way back home.
Check out Mazes and Monsters, and it's pretty much that.
Don't watch Mazes and Monsters.
No, don't watch
Mazes and Monsters. No, watch Mazes and Monsters. It's awesome. It's just awesomely bad. It's great.
I'll give you the full story on the way.
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then when you come on next, you can tell everyone.
I can tell everybody what I thought.
Yeah,
of
you
it.
Know
okay.
about the steam tunnels. Yes.
Yes. So she's just coming at me, and finally, when she paused a moment to take a breath.
Go on.
I'm sorry, Chris.
Would you like
me to go slower?
No. She paused. Take a breath. Continue. This is.
Yeah. I'm telling you, it's not that exciting. But anyway, she paused to. Hey man, you're.
Is that what she said?
That's what I usually say on all my dates. So. She paused. I looked her straight in the eye. I said, anytime you're interested, you want to sit down around a table. I got it. I'll run you. We'll take a couple of the other
anchors. I bet you will.
I'll run you through an adventure. It'll be great. I'll make up characters. You won't have to worry about that. We'll do the whole thing. And like just immediate, her facial expression, the smile on her face just vanished. And she's looking at me just straight in the eye like she couldn't even believe what she heard. Because I was dead serious. I was dead on serious.
What she was thinking, you know, was finally, at last.
At last, a
someone
real
broke
man.
Through my hard exterior and invited me to a second Disney game.
I can finally live that high school dream of playing a role-playing game.
I was the prom queen. I had the captain of the high school football team, but I never had my bard.
As soon as I put that offer out there, she shut down immediately. The conversation was over. She turned, and then that was it. It was done. And several weeks would go by, and then she brought it up again. And then so I turned right around and said, "Hey, whenever you're ready, let's go. Let's game. We can do that this weekend. You know, clear your schedule. Let's go for it. It'll be awesome. I've played with coworkers before. Let's do this business." And boom, again, shut down completely. You know, and the thing is, she's actually a really nice person, but I think she's a gamerphobe is what I think her problem is.
Do you think that maybe she had a misunderstanding of what gaming was? That maybe it was not something that took place around the kitchen table, but something that took place in the bedroom?
On the kitchen table.
Yeah. She thought
you
were...
You know,
we'll get five of my smelly guy friends and just run you through.
I know. Yeah.
Run you through it, through the game.
That's right.
It'll be an adventure.
Yeah. You'll get experience.
We'll plug this up nicely. Let's do this.
We'll go down in a deep, dark hole.
Oh. We'll go set zero on you. It'll be awesome.
We may not find the secret door, but we can tell ourselves we won anyway.
Oh. This is awful.
No, I think she knew exactly what was going on. But I think that she, like I said, honestly, as nice of a person as she is, I think that she was a gamerphobe, and I think that she had wanted absolutely nothing to do with it. And related to that, it's kind of funny. Just today, as a matter of fact, our corporate marketing consultant, also a very nice guy, he was in today, and I was telling him about the upcoming book that I co-authored that's coming out this summer, and I told him I've been a long time gamer, 30 years, all that kind of. And then he actually had no idea what a role playing game was. And this is a guy who's older than I am, and he's actually pretty hip. And so I kind of
he needs a new hip. I mean,
actually, he may have gotten one. I'm not sure. But I explained to him what a role playing game was. I mean, as far as the big 10,000-foot concept of this whole thing, and he was genuinely interested. So every year, all the marketing directors in our company get together, and we kind of have this summit. We share ideas and all this stuff. And I totally am going to game when we're there. I'm gonna make him sit down, this 60-plus-year-old man, and I'm gonna make him do a role playing game. And I may just make him do a bard, John. That's actually not a bad idea.
Show him how to have fun with gaming.
I will show him how to have fun.
Introduce him
to
the hobby with a good character.
What's great about my workplace, I work for a bunch of accountants. They're usually pretty boring. The first time I ever requested off for a convention, they were like, well, what are you taking off for? And they didn't care. They were giving me the day off. They were just curious what I was doing because they said I was going out of town. And I told them I was going to a nerd convention because I didn't feel like getting into what gaming is to accountants. And now, every time I turn in like a request off and it's only for like a Friday or something, so I know I'm going to a convention, he just looks at me and goes, how does somebody like you game? And I don't
You're
get
like
that
a girl.
I don't know what
lady bit. That's not allowed.
I don't know. I guess I'm assuming he doesn't even understand the concept of gaming, but it's really funny because
you probably also get on the internet. That's equally true. Illegal.
Do math.
Yeah. No yeah. property.
And vote. Drive.
But I do have some of my coworkers who embrace my nerd. And I had one guy, he's kind of goofy. And he's like, Julie, you got to come in to my office really quick. So I go in there and he knows I'm a huge Star Wars fan. But he always, on purpose, mixes up Star Wars with Star Trek. And so he had taken
I get that too.
Yeah. He does it on purpose, though. He took apart a USB. I guess he took the chip and stuck it to his forehead. And he goes, I am the Borg. Like, as soon as I walked into the room, I about died laughing. And now every time he'll just like walk up to my desk and just have it attached to his forehead. It's like the greatest thing ever.
My coworkers are actually pretty cool with that when I've talked about it. I mean, because I guess I'm basically a flaming gamer as far as that goes. I have no problem. I have had... And let's remember that I'm at a management level here,
I'm a management.
I'm a man.
You like
I'm
managing 40. Man.
I do, but we'll have our department head meetings and we'll be around the big formal wood conference table, and the time would come up when we'd be going, it would be, drinking brandy and smoking cigars and, slapping secretaries' asses and that stuff. But it would come time to where I'd have to go to Fear the Con or to Gen Con, and I'd say, I'm going to be on vacation next week, and, my boss at the time, she'd look at me like, are you going to go do your nerd thing? I'm like, hells yeah, I'm going to be getting my game on down in Indy or down in St. Louis. It's going to be great. I'll bring you back a full report. Some either looked at me like they can't believe I made it this far career-wise, or they're just glad that they don't know me outside of work. It's either usually one of those two facial expressions, but I don't give a shit. I don't care about that. It's fun.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
I'm a gamer. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Yeah, it's better to just let the flag fly. I think I've told the story of my Battletech plea deal on the mics before, but the short version some guy couldn't find my number. Prosecutor searched for my name online. Found Blood Moon Goblins, then found Fear the Boot, then wanted to talk about WoW and Battletech for an hour over the phone, and at the end of that discussion, my DUI got amended down to Carelson and Prudent. So not my DUI, my client's DUI, my job. And
your DUI is a total different matter.
Of course. Yeah, those get axed every time because of Vinny the Fish downtown in the PA's office. It's good to be a gamer.
Yeah.
It is good to be a groomer.
I fly my flag, but it's not too hard. I mean, I'm in IT.
Yeah. But you're expected to show up in a Batman t-shirt and be you.
You know what's weird about IT, though, at least in St. Louis, is that it's pretty much 50-50 nerd, non-nerd.
Yeah,
I mean, like my I'm part of a 2-man team, and my coworker, not a nerd at all, doesn't watch movies. He's really into sports. He plays sports and stuff. He has another buddy in the company that he used to work with at a different place, and he was telling a story, and then the buddy said something about it. You know, it's like when Kirk was trying to fight that Gorn. My coworker was like, "The f- Gorn." And he's trying to explain to him the reference, the Star Trek reference of that episode and stuff, classic Star Trek. And he's like, what in the hell are you talking about? So his buddy IMs me because he knows I sit right next to him and he knows I'm a huge nerd. And he's like, Chad, explain the Gorn Kirk episode to Ryan. And he just IMs me with it. And I didn't know that they were talking and stuff. And I'm like, so Ryan, Captain Kirk goes to this planet. He's like, go yourself.
No, I know exactly what you're talking about, though, because that's something that I see as well, is that everyone presupposes that if you work in something computer related, everybody you work with must be a nerd and into nerd things. While that may be true with certain things like video games, for example, that's pretty ubiquitous. But
yeah, you're not a nerd anymore if you play
video games. Yeah, exactly.
You have to have a little bit more chops.
Everybody does that. Yeah. But within the group of people that I have worked with for the past several years, I'm thinking through all the different people I've worked with in IT. And I do not think I have worked with a single other tabletop gamer. I do not think I have literally ever worked with a single other tabletop gamer, despite the fact that I've been doing professional programming now for like 16 or 17 years. And I have never once, because it really does seem like you get two kinds of people. You get what we think of as the gamer nerd. And that's one type of person that somebody's into, even if it's not tabletop gaming. They're into Star Wars or Star Trek or anime or whatever it may be. But then you get this other type, which is somebody where, regardless of age, it's like an archetype or stereotype pulled straight out of like the 1940s egghead, where they're real analytically minded, they're intelligent, they're maybe a little bit socially awkward, but if you ask what they're into, it's going to be completely normal things. You know, they're having a barbecue this weekend and don't know what Star Trek is, and Chad just sent me something today that brought another one back to mind. They don't know what Colossus is, then, but I'm talking about the supercomputer here, not the X-Men.
I didn't even know what that one was, actually.
Really?
When I read that today, I was actually, as I'm reading it, I'm thinking, wow, this is where Skynet came from.
Yeah, no, it is. Actually, James Cameron based Skynet off of that. In fact, I have been told.
Well, for people who don't know what we're talking about.
Let me back up and talk about a movie from some years back.
No, let's talk about something different. Let's talk about how I got into that movie.
Well, let me tell you how.
There was a drunken party.
Okay, well, I've got a story that goes back farther than that.
Oh, damn!
You see,
God, he's such a one-upper.
I know, yeah.
I am the inheritor of a very proud heritage, because, you see, while he predates role-playing games, my dad was a nerd.
Okay? Definitely. If you've ever met the man, yes.
My dad was a nerd straight out of the 1950s. I mean, he was born
straight out of Compton.
Yeah, straight out of Compton, Michigan. But he was born in 1945, so spent, of course, his childhood really in the 50s and his adolescence in the 60s. And he was a nerd long, long before Geek Chic. And, you know, there weren't really role-playing games or anything like that back around then. It's certainly not anywhere within, you know, the notable public domain. But he was really into things like Mad Magazine and all the old, like, 1950s suit zipper sci-fi movies. And growing up, it was through him that I was first introduced to the original series of Star Trek. It was through him that I saw Forbidden Planet, the original Day the Earth Stood Still, all that kind of stuff. And one of my dad's favorite all-time movies is a movie called
Colossus, The Forbidden Project.
Yeah, Colossus. And what it's about is about a guy who makes a supercomputer to control the American Defense Network.
Always works.
Well, this was the movie that...
Right.
I mean, and somebody may be able to quote something prior to this, but at least as far as I know the history of genre trope, this is where it began. Kind of in the same way that H.G. Wells really started the alien invasion genre. You know, even if... Once again, I'm sure somebody could probably find something more obscure prior to that.
Aliens built a pyramid, dude.
Oh. Not
there
saying
was
it's aliens.
Space traveling science fiction, at least as far back as ancient Greece.
Right. But the point, though, being, though, that at least as far as the modern iteration of it, you probably started H.G. Wells. In the same way, this movie kind of kicks off this trope of a supercomputer that becomes self-aware and eventually wants something its master doesn't want. And the climax of the movie is it ends up making contact with a similar supercomputer in Russia. And the two of them together are like, if you touch us and try to unplug us, we'll nuke you all, trying to defend themselves. And the computer demands of its creator, says, I just want you to acknowledge that I am alive. And he yells at it, never. And James Cameron, apparently this guy was an extra or was on the set or something like that. The guy that made this movie was an extra on the set of Titanic. And James Cameron, who was a big fan of that movie, which is indeed where Skynet came from, apparently across the set.
Yes, Harlan Ellison, it is. Shut up. Take your lawyers and go back home.
Across the set of the Titanic, so across the fake boat or whatever, sees him and starts yelling, never! And this guy's like, what? What are you talking about? I don't, because he couldn't, there's no context to this.
Nerd.
And finally he's like, what are you talking about? And then finally gets out of him that he was a big fan of that movie and is a big fan of this guy's work. But it just came out. I don't know how good or bad this is going to be. And of course, I'm cringing with fear on where it's going to head. But they're apparently doing a remake of this. And
apparently Will Smith is a huge fan of the movie, and he's been trying to get it
remake
of it going since 2007.
And it could be good, you know.
It's like anything.
That almost worries me, because as good of an actor as Will Smith is, he's always a knight in shining armor, and the movies he's in wrap up with the good guys blowing up the bad guys 99% of the time.
Well,
in the original source fiction, Colossus wins, at least at the outset of the first installment. I don't know about in the film, but in the book he does. And I don't know if Will Smith will allow that.
In the books, now I haven't read the books, but I've read the synopsis of the books. It's interesting. Colossus wins, but humanity needs it to win.
Yeah.
Because there's an alien invasion in the second book.
Yeah.
And it kind of really goes off the rails. It gets pretty interesting.
That was also the reason I discovered Colossus was in searching. This will surprise you not at all, Chad, anyway, in searching into the acknowledged inspirations of Deus Ex.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the endings of the original game involves two supercomputers who discover one another, meld, and then decide to govern humanity, which is word for word what happens in
And I love how in the movie how they govern humanity, because there's no robots. They don't have laser turrets. They don't have robots or drones or anything like that, but they control all the nukes.
Yep.
And they say, if you touch us or the nukes, we will launch the nukes.
Yeah. And if you turn our phone off, because they're talking to each other all the time at a billion, jillion gigawatts per second, and that's how they're getting smarter. And I think the first countermeasure the humans make is to sever the line. And at that point, each of them on the other side of the sea says, put the phone back on or I'm launching the entire payload, and then they're going to launch back.
Right.
That's where you lost me, though, because computer or not, there is no guy that's ever going to want to talk to a girl for that long.
I don't think Russian Colossus is a chick.
No. They're both gender neutral.
Yeah.
I think Chris is just kind of presupposing some kind of a...
Well, you did say meld.
I'm gender imprinting.
Oh.
Daedalus is clearly a guy. Helios is just sort of a head, and Icarus is just an eyeball. I love Icarus. Icarus has been my Steam icon for years.
Is that is what your Steam icon is.
He's
just
so creepy. I love his voice. I love the fact that he shows up on the public terminals where you are. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god. I need to play that through again, despite the fact that I just finished a playthrough about a week ago.
It's so dated.
No.
It's painful to play. Yeah.
You know why it's dated?
Why?
It's dated because it's so terrifyingly prescient that they couldn't make it anymore. They used to have unatco.com. Guess when they pulled it down?
Yeah.
Day of game.
Mm-hmm.
What would happen if there was a terrorist attack on New York and we surrendered all of our civil liberties to an overgrown security agency in the name of protecting ourselves? Oh, no. That would never happen.
The Statue of Liberty gets pulled
out. A year later?
Yeah.
Oops.
Yeah, oops, we're in the future dystopia. Sorry about that.
Where's my flying car? And my cybernetics?
No.
Am I sitting on the moon?
Am I sitting on the moon? It's a junkyard.
Have you guys seen anything on like the Watch Dogs game? It's by Ubisoft.
Yes, yes, I have.
It looks really interesting. Really, it's kind of like Assassin's Creed where you walk around and take care of business, except you're doing it through hacking into people's communication devices and iPads and stuff. It seems really awesome.
Yeah, like one of the things they're talking, there's a club. There's a lot of different ways to get in the club. There's a bouncer at the front door. You punch the bouncer, shoot him, but that causes problems. You can stand in line, but the line goes around the block. Or what they show in the demo is your guy takes out his sort of PDA device and he hacks in to the phone network and he makes everybody in the line and the bodyguard's phone all start ringing at the same time. And everyone's like looking at him like, what the f*** is going on? Well, they're all distracted, so he just whoop, walks right in. And then, you know, he gets him in, there's plot and story and stuff happens and all this cool stuff. And he's like walking through the crowd and he's like trying
to
find...
Can you be really boring? Can you just stand in line?
I don't know. I think hope you can. So.
And just because I want to spend like 90 minutes standing in line.
The reason
to get the
while that sounds that,
yeah, they're going to be an achievement for
while that sounds awful.
I hate achieve culture.
While that sounds awful, I hope they have that because that means that they have that level of detail.
Okay,
they have that attention to detail.
John, you just brought something up that we've got to riff on here. Have achievements changed the way in which you
of
play
course
or view
they
video?
Have. I can't pay attention to the plot. I have to fly my Mutalisk around the entire map until I get every single frickin' thing. Or, God help you, the World of Warcraft ones. I shudder to acknowledge the fact that people have looked out across the totality of the world and all the people in it and all the books in the history of literature and the films in the history of movies and said, I need to get my reputation with the pirates and all of the gadgets and factions up to exalted so I can get the insane title on WoW. Achievements have given birth to this competition to just destroy your own time.
Well, you know, and let me go a step farther than that. I think achievements have also given rise to lazy video game development.
Absolutely.
I was talking with Tex about...
As have pervasive tutorials.
About how achievements are done in Xbox Live. And I asked him once, I said, do you guys have guidelines for achievements? You know, or is it just, I can give points for whatever? And he said, no, there is a set of guidelines. A full game gets 1,000 points. An arcade title, I think, is what, 200 or 250 or something like that. And he told me the exact budget. And he even broke it down. He said, within that, we require that there are so many points that are set aside for replayability. There are so many that are set aside for this. And so there's some guidelines of how these points have to be attributed. You can't just be like, install the game, 1,000 points. Okay, there's
right. All right. Well, that doesn't serve the addiction machine, which is another thing I'm about to rail
on. Here's what gets me more than that is I think you can make a game that is legitimately replayable because of the fact that there are multiple approaches to the game. Deus Ex being a great example.
Deus Ex is probably the example of that.
Are you the hack guy versus the kill guy? You know, whatever. There are some games that I think
Civilization, pretty much any well-thought strategy game should be replayable
certainly.
A lot.
And I think there are some games out there that simply have such a compelling story that after it's done, and we'd probably all disagree on what games those are based on our individual tastes, but nonetheless, there's some games where the story was so good, you say, man.
Okay, let's disagree.
Well,
best compelling story, go.
Well, hold on. Let me finish this thought here. The problem that I have now is when you look at this stuff, the replayability points are being put into the laziest crap.
Yep.
It's like, play the game once through using this power. Like Mass Effect is an example of this. And I'm a Mass Effect fan, okay, outside of the ending of 3.
I'm not.
But
that undid it all, sorry.
I can't blame you for feeling that way, honestly. But the point,
first and second one are really
But good. If you look at, like, let's say Mass Effect
like
1, there's a bunch of achievements where it's like, if you play the majority of the game with individual characters as your party members, that's an achievement.
Mm-hmm.
So you could play the game through the exact same way, making all the same choices, but if you have Ashley and Caden in your party, then that's two achievements. And then if you replay it, but keep Rex and Garrus in your party, that's a different achievement. Instead of really actually encouraging diversity of play, it's just repetition of play. It's not just a matter of the Pavlov's response of, oh, now I've got to play the game, because even I'm not that completionist. But it bugs me because of the fact that they become lazy. I look at what achievements you can get from a lot of video games, and it's just like, yeah, redo the whole thing and keep this different hat on while you're doing it, and it's an achievement.
I have active contempt for achievements, and I almost go out of my way not to do them, but I won't go that far because that would mean they win in just a different way.
See, my
I've never understood them. I've never understood the purpose of it, and I'm not nearly anywhere even close to the hardcore video game players you guys are. But when I first really like when they first started showing up in the games that I would play, my thought was, what is this and why is this important? You know, is it contributing to my success in the game, or is this just something to stroke my epeen? And
it's a pellet from the pellet dispenser.
Yeah. And some people get really fixated on them.
I don't get them, man. I just don't get it.
Going back to WoW, there were achievements for there's some dungeon where you ride on the backs of dragons, and there's different achievements for everybody, and the dragons have different roles, and you're meant to take a mix of
Oculus.
Them.
Oculus.
And there was the Oculus. There were different achievements if everybody took the same color of each of the dragons. And, I mean, every time I would do that run, there was always a fight with at least one person at the start because they wanted us to all use only one dragon type, which meant we were probably going to fail repeatedly and die a whole lot and spend the next 8 hours trying to get through what should be a 30 to 60 minute run just so he could get his Chivo or whatever. And it's like, dude, you don't get a damn thing for it. Who cares?
Or find a bunch of other people who want to do it.
I mean, I will at least give credit. And there's a lot of people that hate this, and I totally get why. But I will at least give credit in the Arkham games with the Riddler puzzles. People find them horribly annoying, and I totally get why. But I will at least give them credit there, particularly in Arkham City and to a lesser degree Arkham Asylum. At least you get to see different parts of the story as you go through it. There is something in there beyond just the achievement for doing that task. It's not just like, well, I just did it, and all I got was 15 more points on my gamer score.
Back in the day, you had superfluous crap like that, but it usually had a nugget for you.
Yeah, you got
other
the story
than you got
or
more
something.
Xbox points.
See, my thing is I find myself making up my own I don't pay attention to achievements. Like, when they pop up, I don't even know what the hell they say. But, like, I make my own. Like, I'm going back through Assassin's Creed games and trying to get 100% just for myself. Achievements don't mean anything to me.
Oh,
because
God, all those feathers.
I know. I've already.
No.
There's a website. There's a website I found. Where
just getting
they
inside
have,
will be an achievement. Did you see that coming? Because I did.
Oh, geez.
You remember that?
There's
Dan?
Like a
StarCraft 2
thing where you can check off your feathers.
Just getting inside.
It's really awesome.
You'll have to tell me off mic because I probably did it because if they were reasonable.
You had to do it.
I did the
when you're attacking the hybrid base. In one of her dialogues, Kerrigan goes, just getting inside will be an achievement. That place is so fortified. And then when you beat the mission, 10 points, just getting inside.
Oh.
Like, yeah, okay, that was pretty clever.
I'm going to take an opposite tack from you guys. I'm going to kind of play devil's advocate here.
Oh, you've never done that before.
No, never.
No, I've never seen that happen. This will be fun.
Chad is a contrarian. Okay, we'll see.
I'm not a contrarian.
Let's see how the...
just
see, layers and layers of irony.
See, that's the problem with being accused, constantly accused of being a contrarian, is that you can never deny it, because to deny it proves the argument. And it's an unfair accusation in that. But I have opinions. I have very strong opinions.
All right, so why are Chiefs good, or at
Chiefs,
least defensible?
Well, I think that they're defensible. I think that there are good achievements, and then there's bad. There's stupid achievements, not ones that don't break the game or anything. You can ignore achievements if you don't like them, or you can not. But when I play a game...
But what if the social aspects of the game make people showing up wanting to fly 5 green dragons, and then you can't ignore them anymore?
Well, you're playing an MMO, and it's a social game, and they don't need achievements to make you do stupid stuff in an MMO.
True.
But I'm just talking like achievements in a normal game.
Okay.
All right.
An MMO has an additional layers on it because of the social aspect.
Right, right.
So
everyone gets something different out of it. So, right. Okay, we'll take multiplayer off the table for simplicity's sake. So single-player games.
Yeah. So single-player games, achievements, I like them because when I get a game, I'll scroll through and I'll just glance at the achievements.
Yeah.
Basically, I'm looking for funny stuff, things that'll make me giggle or humor stuff. I won't really actually look really in depth at them because I won't get any spoilers on the game.
Sure. Red Dead Redemption had some really freaking funny achievement names.
Yeah. And
if you kill 18 bears, you get barely legal.
It's funny stuff.
Yeah.
So
okay, that's pretty funny.
So when I'm playing a game, I'm playing it and playing it, and all of a sudden, ding, an achievement comes up. I wasn't gunning for it. I wasn't trying to get it, but it happened. Oh, what was that? Click on it, see what happened. And it'll either be something stupid like walk 600,000 steps and right. like, well, okay, I don't care about this. Or it'll tell you something about what's going on or what happened or what you just did and you'd be like, oh, well, that's kind of cool. It also achievements point out to you different ways of playing the game. I totally see what you're saying about repetitiveness.
Yeah.
Repetitiveness is stupid where you have to play the game over and play the game over and play the game over and then you get it for not having a life. But looking at the game in a different way, like Red Dead Redemption, for example, had a achievement for shooting a guy's hat off. It's Red Dead Redemption is a Wild West game. And so one of the things they had is that it, you know, they did a slowdown time, one person mano a mano quick draw where you have to time it and get it out and boom and you blast them. If you don't shoot them but blow the hat off their head, then you get an achievement for that. Well, I saw that and I'm like, I didn't even know you could shoot somebody's hat off their head. Because that's not pointed out in the right. game anywhere. When I saw that, well, I'm trying to blast people's hat off the head. Not to get the achievement. I don't care about the achievement. I'm trying to pop people's hats off their head because it's funny.
I don't think that achievements are inherently bad ideas, okay? Mm-hmm. I don't think the idea of saying, look, we're going to reward you with what is admittedly useless points. I mean, in most games, you can't cash these achievements out for anything. But, okay, fine. We'll just say you have 15 points for sake of saying you have points for whatever reason to do certain things. And as you said, at times they can point out to you aspects of gameplay, approaches to the game.
If you're playing a historical game, you might do something like Civ has a bunch where you do something in game and you get the achievement for it and it's a little historical note.
Yeah.
You know? And
yeah, and I don't see, and I don't have a problem with that. I think my issue is with how, what they've become.
To people,
because one, I think people place way too much emphasis on. I mean, Chad, you and I were playing a game on the Xbox Arcade. I don't even remember what it was. It was just some stupid. We were driving around these like mm-hmm. Jeeps with turrets shooting at things, and
Jackal.
It was like Jackal, but it was it's more modern.
Oh yeah, the new.
And the game gives you points, and mm-hmm. one of the things that was always funny to both of us back throughout the 80s and up until, I guess, about the mid-90s, was every video game you got had to score you in points. Mm-hmm. And points in most games did not do a damn thing.
One-ups if you're lucky.
Yeah, one-ups if you're lucky, probably not even that. It was usually they didn't do anything for you, but nonetheless, the game is telling you, oh, you got 5,000 points for nearly getting yourself killed. Never mind the fact that those 5,000 points are useless. Since you and I were having, this is, I guess, maybe about a year or two ago we were playing this, we were having a fake fight over who
points.
Over who got the most points and who got, you know, you son of a bitch, you took that 5,000 point bonus. And, and the whole
one of us would ram the other to keep them from shooting something so they can get the points
for it.
Yeah.
And the problem is, there are some people out there, and as John said, it is inescapable that eventually this spills over into a social situation. That's how they think. I mean, you know, what we are treating as humor becomes a way of functioning to them. But even that, I will segregate down to saying, okay,
it's their $60.
It's their $60. If that's how they want to play the game, that's their choice. It's not my problem. If it is my problem, I'll just find somebody else to play it with.
Like, you pay your $60 for Arkham Asylum, let's say.
Right.
And then I pay, well, actually, I didn't pay $60. I borrowed your copy.
You borrowed my copy, which is fine.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But you want to get 100% completion on a game that you like. And I can't do that. Like, see, I
it hurts my brain.
I look at you doing that, and I have to actually make a conscious and not an emotional decision, because I see you trying to get 100%, and it's your money.
Yeah.
It's your time. And you're having fun, which is awesome.
Right.
High five. Great. But I internalize that on myself, and I see myself playing this game trying to get 100%, and I see myself breaking the controller.
Oh, no, and even for me, there are places I won't go.
Sure.
And now, I will go beyond the low-hanging
feathers in Assassin's Creed.
Oh, my gosh.
Here's the one I'll give you even better than that. Anything put up by Rockstar.
Yeah.
Forget it.
Yeah.
Drug packages.
Yeah. Graffiti
statues.
All the walls.
Yeah.
Spider-Man games are the same way, especially the older ones where it's like all the time trials and reach the top of every building. Forget it.
Yeah.
And there are games where I see these achievements where it's like it is just not worth it.
But you do have to run the balls out of South Central, even if you don't tag everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you have to grant me that. Yeah. And the vodka.
Well, yeah.
But, you know, I'll
That's
go...
That's part of the game.
It's, I'll go beyond the low-hanging fruit to some of the higher branches, but I am not scaling to the top of the tree to get everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just... That's not worth it to me.
I can't help it.
But...
I am, like, the worst completionist ever. Like, you have no idea. Well, like, I'm playing... I'm still going through some of the Assassin's Creeds and trying to get 100%, and one of them is I'm playing Revelations, and you're in Turkey, and you make crap money compared to all the other Assassin's Creed 2, because you're in Rome, and Rome makes more money than Turkey, and you have to buy these two books, and they're like $200,000 a piece, and I need two more freaking books, and I literally play it for hours just screwing around trying to accumulate money to buy these damn books to finish this ounce of story. I am a ridiculous completionist, and I can't help it.
I don't get it. Like, yeah. I think there are people who actually can't help it. I think you're using that sort of idiomatically, but I think there are people out there who just pellet machine.
I can't help it.
So you really are serious.
I'm serious.
You compulsively play achievements until you beat them.
Not achievements, oh, no, but in-game stuff.
Okay. Whole website's dedicated to that. There's
not
one.
I don't like achievements, but...
Called something to the effect of, like, true achievements or something to that. It's something like that, where what it does is it looks at the publicly posted achievements through, like, Xbox profiles or whatever.
Yeah.
And it looks at the percentage of people that complete each one and then reweights them based on that. So if everybody completes it, it's not worth that many points. If only like 1 in 100 people completed, it's worth a lot of points. And so based on that, you get a quote unquote true gamer score.
Okay.
You know, John, that ridiculous getting 1 million feathers or whatever, you didn't do it, but I did.
Yeah.
So I'm clearly the
that
better.
That just proves to me that some idiot could run a program that tells you you win if you go dig 1,000 ditches in your backyard with every minute of your free time for the next 10 years. Well, and you would do it.
Yeah. And see, and that's my beef with it. Is it's become a shortcut to game development. When you don't feel like actually fleshing the game out, just create a repetitive or obscure task, or maybe even a repetitive or obscure approach to the entire game, put 25 points behind it, and now all of a sudden it counts as 10 hours of content.
But no. Points!
Exactly.
No. And
see, I only do
a book in that amount of time.
I only do it if there's going to be storyline involved, though. I think that's my downfall. Is if any storyline is going to come from whatever I'm trying to complete 100%, that's the only time I'll do it. Because like the feathers actually give you a really awesome storyline.
Yeah,
and
the stories
Creed
aren't that good.
Some of them are.
I came to this realization playing StarCraft.
Okay.
StarCraft is your bar for storytelling?
No, it wasn't the bar.
I got a list
this
of games.
This game just came out.
Yeah,
all right, yeah, all right. Here we're going to go.
Basket.
We're going to go on John's trope tear.
Okay, but StarCraft just came out, so keep the spoiler free.
No.
Yes.
If you want to beat Heart of the Swarm and you haven't seen anything Blizzard has ever done in the last 15 years, and you're going to be surprised when the bad guy was just a corrupted pawn of a greater evil that's introduced in this expansion pack, stop listening right now. I'll give you 5 seconds. Doop, 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 doop.
All right. Oh, awesome. A chance for me to talk.
All right. Shut up, Chris. Okay, first of all, it went from being the bugs and the marines and the scions to the devil who uses magic, which I don't know. I wish somebody would book Trisha Helfer in a science fiction property that doesn't start off as hard military science fiction and end in the devil who uses magic. But so far they're 0-3 on major properties that I'm aware of.
I don't know who Trisha Helfer is, but continue.
She's Cylon 6, who is actually, an angel.
She's also...
Now she's Sarah Kerrigan, who was fighting against Arcturus Minx in the UED.
Kerrigan?
No.
No. They recast the voice actress.
But now in what is the... 6 in StarCraft and Brood War. What is now the 8th StarCraft campaign, the bad guy is actually basically the devil, not any of the StarCraft factions, not the Zelnaga. I don't want to go too deep in the StarCraft lore because it's convoluted and shit. Go ahead, call me out on the forums.
Oh my god.
But once 10 again...
10 million South Koreans just all cried out at once.
They did! Finally, they're about to throw down. They better get worked up. What was my point? My point was tropes that I hate. Tropes that I hate.
I got so
okay.
mad I forgot.
Primary trope that I hate. Hard science fiction where it turns out to be magic and or god and or the devil. Villains. Prior primary villains that turn out to have been unwitting stooges in later installations. Blizzard does this every single time. When I started
I'm beginning to see a pattern here in your bad games.
Yes! No. I'll get to Mass Effect very soon.
Oh, you're preaching to the choir in Mass Effect.
Yeah, I don't know. Right, what can you say about Mass Effect that hasn't been said?
Okay.
Not.
The orcs. We were drunk on demon blood. The Zerg. First, well, we were working for the Overmind, who turned out to be working for good over the long course of the game. And now we weren't even doing that. We're fighting the I don't even know. I don't even want to go into the details of these things.
You're just so flustered.
I'm incoherently mad. Go ahead, Chris. All right,
but can I say something about Zerg? I say something about Zerg?
Yeah.
Okay. When I was listening to that bonus episode, when that question came up, my choice was Zerg because that was the bad guy in Toy Story 2. Yes. I had no idea who you were talking about.
There is a long TV tropes page called like ZRG. And sorry for everyone, I was whining about conserving time and I just sent you to TV tropes, so my bad. But there are so many genre villains that's names are some combination of ZRG or a nearby consonant sound and a vowel. It just goes on forever.
Jean
and
Zerg Baptiste from Toy Story is one of them. Emmanuel Zorg.
But
John, let me give you a counterpoint to that. While I'm not disagreeing with what you said, I look at something like Arkham City, where I thought Arkham City overall had a really good story. If you dig through the achievements and some of the obscure stuff, which means digging around to find like the interview tapes that were done with some of the supervillains and whatnot in there, I thought that was some of the best story in the game. They did an excellent job on those, and I really felt that added quite a bit to my sense of what was going on, what led up to these events, why everyone was doing what they were doing. It added a great coherence to the setting that I think if they would have simply just had the villains carrying on about would have been a little bit of senseless exposition. And see, this goes back to the whole thing. If I don't have a problem with the idea of achievements or hidden content or anything like that, but my problem is it's become a motivator of lazy game design where it's like, I'm just going to send you down the path. You get these 20 points for no reason other than you get the 20 points on some super obscure task.
I don't know if it's the achievements that are the motivator. I think it's money and time budget.
Sure,
and
fair enough.
Out of the door.
And there is a truth here. There is a truth here, which makes it work, which is the fact that achievements work. If you want people to do something, start rewarding that behavior.
Play your game forever.
I used to work for a home building company. And when I was working there, even though I myself was working in technology, not in anything that was related to manufacturing or construction or whatever, I was put through several of these kind of industrial philosophy courses, you know, things by like Dr. Duran, who was recently deceased and whatnot. And one of the things that they talked about is the danger of metrics in business, because
The imperial system.
I was just going to make a joke about the French.
If you want to know what people will do in a job, the answer is whatever you're measuring. Okay, so for example, if you have a call center and you say, we are going to rate you based on the number of calls that you complete in an hour, then the people who are on the phones will turn those calls over as rapidly as they can because of the fact that that's what they're being measured on. If they're being measured on number of problems solved, then their behavior shifts. And now all of a sudden they start to look at things in a little bit of a different way. But whatever you measure is what people will attempt to live up to. Now, in the case of a job, it's a little more clear cut because you're looking for that promotion or bonus or whatever it is that they're incentivizing you with. But in the case of a video game, I mean, look, it's in human nature. We're wired that when somebody says, if you do this, you're a little more special, then people are going to do it
You think critically about that for like a picosecond and realize that you're wasting loads of time to receive nothing?
Well,
sure.
Here's the thing.
That's what this episode's become about.
Here's the thing.
But my point
I don't play video games to feel special over somebody. I play them for
story.
The broad umbrella of entertainment, story, challenge, social aspects.
To recycle saying from earlier in the episode, but take it back to its original form, you're preaching to the converted. I completely agree with
but
you.
But I don't think
but
that they're
the reality,
bad.
No, I don't think they are. They are inherently bad, but that's how they play out as people.
Because I've gotten some really funny achievements, and I've had, back to the hat thing, I've had a lot of games where going through the achievements, I'm like, can I do that? Because I like challenge in games, too. And so, I could have a game where I like driving cars over ramps. I really like the Grand Theft Auto series. And there were a couple of achievements where it's just like, okay, ramp this boat. And I'm like, oh my God, you can ramp the boat? And then so I would try it out. I'm like, wow, this is really difficult. And I tried and tried. And then I get the achievement for it. And I really wasn't doing it for the achievements. I mean, have you ever met an athlete who doesn't play the sport to get the medal, but gets the medal anyway? I mean, that's maybe not... There are athletes who...
No, I get that.
Go to the podium and they get the medal, and that's what they were trying to get. And then there's ones that were... They get the medal, but they weren't trying for the medal. They were trying to win, but the medal wasn't the thing.
And yeah, I mean, it turns around the question of motivation. For some people, game playing is a process. For some people, there's a goal, whether it's to see the whole story or to be number one on your Grandmaster ladder or whatever. So, yeah, there's different motivation.
Yeah. And for me, I play a game, and I try to do, like, emergent gameplay stuff in it. I try and find games within the games that aren't necessarily part of the games. Depends on the game, though. That's why I like open-world sandbox-type games. And I play a game, and I try and get a good story out of it and challenge and entertainment and social aspects. I play a lot of multiplayer games. But when I'm done with the game, I'm done with it, and I put it away. Regardless of achievements or challenges or anything like that, regardless, in fact, of if I've actually finished the game. I've stopped playing games that I have not beaten. I have not gotten to the end of the story. I don't know what happens at the end of it because I'm done with it.
That hurts me inside.
Yeah,
that hurts me too. I have a hard time doing that.
I've had a few of those.
Where I can do that if I'm sufficiently PO'd.
It depends on how annoyed I am. Yeah,
for me, it's not an anger thing. It's more like...
I mean, I don't mean mad. Don't like the story.
Well, I'm enjoying the game, and I get to a point where, you know what? I've gotten my money's worth. This was a satisfying, good game. Done. But you still have 2.5 more hours of gameplay. Yeah, but if I play that and get to the end, I'm not going to enjoy it. I'm stopping it at its peak.
No, I get that. And yeah. Despite my completionist bent, there are plenty of games I have sitting out there that I have never completed because... I didn't enjoy the gameplay. Sure. I only enjoyed it to a certain point. I couldn't stand the voice acting of maybe one or more characters.
That's tough. One of those bad voice actors.
I tell you, a series that does that to me every freaking time is Star Ocean. I like the Star Ocean series in theory, which I realize sounds so strange, but all the things about the series should work for me. But man, they always got to throw in at least one character that I just cannot stand to the point I don't complete the game.
That's how I was. It took me like a year to do Final Fantasy 13, and then I was pissed when I beat it.
I just had the same thing with Magna Carta 2. There was one character in there that was just so annoying that I could not get through the game. I had to give up the game because this one character was just... which sucks is overall the game was pretty good, but there was just one character that, man, every time she appeared, I wanted to shoot my TV. And I
like Elvis.
Yeah, I mean, it was.
That's God, one of the, I want to shoot a TV. That's one of the reasons why I like so games in, like Mass Effect and Dragon Age, where you could pick your party. So you
TV.
Just leave that one out.
Yeah, be like, I do not want to hear you speak.
So get the hell out of here.
Stay on the Normandy.
P.S. That's Meryl in Dragon Age 2, by the way. Continue.
So anyway,
Dragon Age games. Awesome.
Yes.
I guess where we'll wrap this one up. So,
Dan, what's your favorite game?
That's a pretty...
Don't. Quit pushing around.
Yeah, we did say we were going to do this.
Favorite game, what is it? Quick.
Good God.
Just say it. Stop hiding.
You go last. Ultima Online.
Damn. Julia?
Oh, geez. No, come back to me.
Oh, Chad. Shit.
Can't believe I'm the only one who doesn't even blink. I'll give three answers. Ultima Online, Alpha Centauri, and Ultima Online, the Second Age.
Since I said the word specifically favorite game, not best game, I'm going to say any of the Civilization games.
Okay.
I'm going to pick one that is probably going to shock a lot of people, unless they've listened to the show for a while and they've probably heard me say it before. I'm favorite game of all time, and I am probably the only person in the world that would say this, Ultima 9.
That's disgusting.
What about you, Chris?
I picked Ultima Online, and I'm the most disgusted.
Are we talking video game? Is that what we're talking
about? Yes, your favorite, not the best. We're not saying this is the best game. Just
my favorite video game?
The one that you got the most enjoyment out of playing.
Yeah.
Masters of Orion 2, hands down.
Ooh, good pick. Move.
I'm going to go more modern, and I have to say that the first Dragon Age, Dragon Age Origins.
DAO is like, your favorite game of all time, really?
Yeah,
it's a
I
good
don't know
game,
why.
But I don't think I've ever heard anyone say
I'm
that.
I'm in the minority that I preferred 2 to Origins, but I realize I'm in the minority.
Yeah, I actually vastly preferred Origins. I bought 2 on your recommendation a couple weeks ago and got like 5 hours into it, and it was just like,
Stick with it. It's
the
a
story
game.
Gets really
I
good.
Will describe story. The game as being much like an Alexander Dumas novel. As you are playing through the game, you really don't understand why you're playing it until all of a sudden near the end, it all starts coming together. And you start realizing that, like, oh, all these random errand boy missions actually spell out a much bigger
also,
plot.
Also, I'm pissed that Janeway came back after I leveled up specifically.
No, that I get you on that.
I just discovered my achievement, the Pavlov box that I actually responded to, the possibility of killing Captain Janeway in DAO.
Did you play the expansion?
You can attempt to kill her there.
Oh, really? She's in, I own that game. I've never played it, but I bought it.
She plays the voice of the darkness in Alan
guess
Wake.
Guess what's getting installed on Steam as soon as I get home?
Yeah, you can spend another game attempting to kill... What's her actress's name?
Kate Mulgrew.
Yeah, Kate Mulgrew.
I have nothing against Kate Mulgrew. She's a fine performer. I just hate the character of Janeway so much that I killed Flemeth because of that.
She's from Iowa. I'm going to try and use my connections to get her Kevin record a custom thing for you,
Janeway. Oh, my God. That would be amazing.
I have no idea how I'm ever going to contact her, but I'll figure out something.
All right. Well, anyways, check the show notes, everyone. Thank you guys for tuning in.
Show notes? What the you even have to know?
We had some announcements at the start that we're going to link to some things.
Oh my gosh, that seems like it was yesterday when we did that.
Well, I know actually
an hour and 11 minutes
feels
ago.
Like yesterday was when we were actually trying to do a regular episode and
everything
realized,
kept us
yeah,
from it.
And everything from technical problems to creative problems to whatnot
to
Chris's old YouTube
pretty much
watching.
A to Z in the dictionary was against that happening. So all right,
we didn't have time for that.
We nobody got time for that. So anyway, thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you guys next time.
See ya.